Hey guys, it's Tuesday, June 9th. Today I'm going to read a joke by George Carlin. If you guys want to get a mom tattoo and save a little money, just get two letters done. Get about a 1-inch capital M tattooed on each cheek of your ass in pink and brown ink. Then you bend over. It says mom. Also later on, if you're having sex with your girlfriend and her parents are in the next room, when you finish up, you can just lie on your back, draw your legs up to your chest, and silently say, wow. It was probably funny when George Carlin said it, not me. Carlos Reyes, tattoo artist, aka Statue Kane, Queen's finest. So you were born and raised in Corona?
That's right, yeah. Corona, born and raised.
Did you go to school in Corona too?
Yeah, I did. I went to elementary, junior high school, and then not too far, high school as well.
Have you always had an artistic talent or interest in the arts?
Yeah, I feel like it's hard not to, you know, coming from our background and our neighborhood. It's tough to neglect and not add it to our daily cues, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, I feel like there's so many good artists out there.
Mm. Yeah. Well, let's get to why tattooing. How did you get into it?
I have a brother who did it for chump change and extra income while he was attending college, and he would be like dirt cheap in our basement, so he would get crowds of people whom he couldn't handle the volume, so he just asked me to help him. And at the time I didn't like tattooing, I didn't really respect tattooing, I wasn't fond of the tattoos I saw around, so I wasn't into it. But he had pulled like the big brother card on me, so I said, all right, I'll help him out. And once I started tattooing, I was a novice. I was very amateur at what I was doing, you know, learning from somebody who learned it from himself in the basement, so I wasn't too skilled. But my interest really spiked, you know, more so than his. And I just took off from there. He finished college, he got whatever internship he wanted, and he just dropped it. And I continued. I picked up the ball from there, I guess.
Pretty nuts. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to think that it started in a basement.
Started, and you know, now with all this pandemic and they're not letting tattoo shops open, I'm back in a private studio. You know? Started in a private studio, now I'm back in one. And now, not by choice, because they don't let tattoo artists work, at least in New York City yet.
Yeah. How long have you been tattooing for?
I've been saying 10 years for like the past 3 years. So it feels like 10, like when I've taken it seriously, as of 10 years ago. But you know, maybe 3 years dabbling, 10 years taking it seriously.
Can you tell us a little bit about the process of collaborating with a client and building the idea for tattoos?
It's funny. I still to this day fight the process. You know, when they tell you to trust the process, but I'm especially tattooers. We're given, like, amongst other tattooers, we're given like a very specific, like, we're given a very specific regimen of application, design layout, and the aesthetic of what a tattoo should be. And then you often don't take too much into consideration the ideas or concepts of a client, because you already have this set state of mind passed down to you as if this is what tattooing art is, style and processes, that when a client comes in and wants to, you know, throw you what we call like a curveball and change up a design, you often just kind of brush it off or try to talk them out of it. But within all that, I've found that the more interesting pieces I've worked on have come from when clients come in and add their two cents to their own design. And I often feel like I should have been more open to that process from the beginning, because if I know how to make meatballs and spaghetti my way, you know, and then here comes someone and says, you know, throw a different aromatic herb to it. Instead of throwing basil, put some parsley in it. Or throw both, you know, throw both of them in it. You'll get a completely different flavor. Not a completely different flavor, but a new flavor. And tattoos have been very, what do you call that? Cookie cutter for a while, you know, where this is what a rose tattoo looks like. This is what a traditional tramp stamp tattoo looks like, you know. This is what this is what a chest piece looks like, and then you know, you get so accustomed to just punching out stuff like that, you almost don't invite change. But I feel like most of the more of the interesting pieces that I've put together or produced have been from clients collabing and me being more open-minded to what they want modified or adjusted to their design.
For the hardware nerds out there, what would you say is your favorite piece of equipment or brands to work with?
It's a tough everything. So if there's about 10 tools and equipment that's in the arsenal of a tattoo artist, you know, going from product you use to tattoo with, ink you put in the skin, ointment you lube the skin with. In the past, I'd say decade or two, everything's gone up in quality. From treating the skin while you're tattooed to the actual ink you put in the skin the quality's gotten up. It's gotten richer. It's gotten cleaner. It doesn't bleed out as much anymore. And then taking to that, the equipment, like the machines, they've gotten so much more precise, and the motors have gone from like coil motors to rotary motors, like similar to what you would find in a sewing machine. You know, a rotary motor, and then the needle just rides the up and down motion, just like a sewing machine.
That pedal that you guys use is like always reminds me of the sewing machine.
Yeah, very, very much so, and more so when I see, I picked up on that relationship because my mother was a seamstress when she was younger, and I've always seen her sewing at home. You know, and depending on the pace of the pedal would be the pace of the machine works. You know, and I've always liked that I can somewhat mimic or take after a process that my mother would do, even though she didn't directly pass it down, you know. I always like enjoyed that aspect of the pedal.
It's almost like that, the nostalgia memory of like childhood.
No doubt. Pedal to needle.
Cool.
Instead of I've always joke about coining the phrase liquid threading, you know, because instead of threading with a needle and thread, you're threading with like liquid, which is the ink, you know.
What are the steps you take to ensure that your client trusts you when you're going to tattoo them?
I feel like tattooing and trust between client and artist typically starts off with a good vibe between the artist and the client. Often I've always seen the very like I said, there was always a process that you stuck to, and then if a client comes in with a new idea or a twist to an original, often I saw the gestures and of a tattoo artist to just be like, no, that's not how it's gonna happen, this is how I'm gonna tattoo. And it comes from like it's residual, because back in the day when tattoo artists, you know, were rock stars, you didn't get to really pick what you wanted. you walked in and they said, this is the tattoo design I'm tattooing today. All Mickey Mouse. Yeah. This is what you're getting. You didn't really have a say, you know? And then I feel like they kept passing that on, that attitude of like, you know, you come in here, I'm blessing you with what you want, with what I want to work on you with. As opposed to like, you know, you're coming in here and you're blessing me with the opportunity to work on a design that you want and potentially even make some money out of it, you know? It's the roles have changed a little bit. So it's a little like half and half where vibes. I feel like the vibes, if it works out and the person is enjoying the approach you have towards what they want, and they don't get that typical like, oh, okay, I guess I could do whatever you want. Or, yeah, I guess I'll whatever you want. I'll put it wherever you want, whatever you want. Here's your tattoo. Have a good day. You know, if the client feels like the artist is into, even in the slightest form, what they're getting, and maybe even trying to put a different tweak or personalize it a little more, that just kicks it all off. And then if they enjoy seeing what you produce, like through your portfolio, even better.
You know, I don't know if you've seen the documentary LA Original.
Yeah. I gotta make some emotions out of that one.
Yeah, so, and you know, I watched it and I thought of you, and then right now you just said, like, you walked into the room and this is what you were just gonna do. Like, I feel like Mr. Cartoon was kind of like that, right? Like, Cartoon would just like walk in and then like, yo, he's here, and then like he would do like this big piece
I don't know if the rest of you guys have seen. There's a very famous tattoo artist called Cartoon. He went on to do sneaker deals with Nike and putting his name and designs on certain shoes and clothing. He was very like West Coast LA style everything. And coming up as I started tattooing, he had a big name. Every time I would come across somebody who was in any form into like urban art, would always bring up his name and say, oh, what do you think about Cartoon? Or oh man, do you like Cartoon work? And I'd say I would, but I wouldn't really. But seeing this documentary, and I mean, I think everyone kind of has an idea of what like West Coast style art and tattooing is like. This movie is about two guys, one photographer, one tattoo artist, and how they both influenced a whole culture, if not a lot of it, even a percentage of it.
Yeah.
They influenced what was put out there. They were touring with all these like Cypress Hill and No Doubt and 50 Cent, you know. And at the time, the photographer was the only guy on staff documenting with film and photography, where then the tattoo artist was just same thing, the only guy on staff, you know, really just, oh, this is a tattoo artist, while we're here, you know, we're kicking the shit for 24 hours a day, and why don't we all just get tattooed by this guy? And Cartoon, it almost looks like he was very fortunate to get his fame, because his clients were, you know, musicians, very influential
people. Yeah, they were big
names. Where he got lucky to take his craft off the ground, and I see this photographer, I forget his name, Steven, I believe. He got a lot of his work published, and it was all through passion. He's not charging anybody. He's just there. He wanted to document everything he was witnessing being staffed, you know, at these big name concerts and events. He filmed videos for, I think, what was it? Blink-182?
Yeah, he toured with Blink-182. He directed videos for, like, after
that. And it was through passion that his career took off, but not his status. Whereas here's a tattoo artist who, just by being in the right place at the right time, you know, his career blew up. But his passion, I feel like, wasn't there. Even when the movie is like interviewing him and he's like, oh, so what's going on? He's like, oh, well, this is just really my clients. I'm doing a tattoo tour and my clients perform once in a while. You know? And it's
yeah, that's so true.
It took a mediocre opinion I had about the guy, and just kind of like,
just didn't get tattooed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy. Uncommon for stuff like that to happen. You see it all the time, and in any medium, like music, you know, there's good music, and then there's okay music, and typically, what's being shoved in our mouth is like okay music or below par music. And you, in your own opinion, you know what great music is to you, and you know it's not hitting like Billboard Top 100. And I feel like it's the same concept where, you know, it's just, it happens to be at the right time at the right place, and quite often the ones who have the passion and the talent, they don't get the exposure or the credit they deserve or what's owed to them.
With that said, is there any particular style you enjoy doing the most, like tribal, vintage, or like American or modern?
I thought I enjoyed realism because I thought it was challenging, and not to say it's not, it is challenging, but the end result, it's like you ever watch those sped up videos of like people doing a craft, like putting together a Lego city or putting together or building a little canoe boat from scratch, whether shaving down wood and then panel and panel and panel, and here's a beautifully, you know, crafted canoe. You know, the challenge is there, but the end result, I feel like nowadays if I see like realism, I skip right through it. I'm enjoying more like mixed media, just like even like in photography or in, let's say, film or anything. Like, you know, the mixed media is like things you didn't think or think you needed to separate and categorize, you know, individually. Now there's like they're just mixed and fused together to put something that you would have never seen before. You know, like even I've seen in the style of like American traditional bold lines, you know, minimal color palette, saturation, and then realism, which is like the whole color wheel spectrum and different muted tones and vibrant tones, and here they are mixing both, and still, even still within that, they have to complement each other. And mixed media, any arts designs where typically you wouldn't see them being used together, I think I enjoyed putting and composing things like that now as of lately.
I've heard that you get invited in featured at events. Has there been a trip or convention or event that kind of sticks out in your mind as your favorite so far?
They kind of all do, because you go away to these foreign cities and you see the glitz and glamour of the big city. You know, typically these conventions are hosted like in the middle of XYZ, midtown of city XYZ, and it's the typical like hustle and bustle of the city, and you don't, that's not like the true that's not the true color or the true essence of the city, really. It's just the midtown. You know, once you get to these cities and you start working with the people from that city and working on the people from that city, and then if you befriend one of them or two of them, and then after the whole 3-day convention is over, what would it be? They'd say, hey, come on, I'll take you out to this place, or I'll take you out to that place. And then we go hang out, and then A, you gain a friend, and then B, you get to see sights that you wouldn't normally see, back alleys and, you know, small holes in the walls, and the true life and spirit of what the city really is. You know, outside the city, inside the city, whichever it is, you wouldn't normally see that unless you were introduced to those cities by a local.
And yeah,
it's an amazing thing. You get to meet people, you get to hear stories, you know, normally within your circle, in your town, you're only exposed to a certain amount of people, you know. But when you travel abroad, and you're almost forced to, especially with tattooing, I'm sitting with these people for, you know, sometimes over 12 hours or 20 hours, you know, spanned over 2-3 days. You know, you take away a little bit from each person, and you learn more, and your mind opens up a little more every time.
Yeah, that's like a really good opening.
It's great.
I guess, an opportunity,
everything,
right?
Everything really expands. Marketing, you know, networking, friendship expands. Now you, if you ever feel like just, you know, taking a weekend off and going to XYZ city, you got somebody there, you know, that can hang out with you and wait for you and potentially even go and make some money while you're out there, while you're spending it, making it, you know. It's a great I'm very fortunate to be in this type of career.
Carlos, you've done numerous amounts of tattoos. Is there any that stand out that you're like, damn, that was fucking cool?
There's quite a few that, like I said, when my approach would just be, you know, just shape the meatballs into spheres and boil the noodles and rip open the can of tomato sauce and there you have it. But you come across people that'll say, well, let's kind of tweak these noodles up a bit, and then, you know. And you know the tomato sauce? Instead of putting it over the pasta, let's put it first. Or let's put it completely on the side and just dip our meatballs in it. You know, you got the same characteristics, just placed differently and introduced differently. You know, you get to appreciate the noodles on their own. And then whenever you feel like you need that tomato taste, you know, you dip the meatballs in it. And I don't know if that makes sense in explaining what I mean with the designs and the tattoos, but like, you've seen almost every tattoo and design by now, but you know, when they're introduced and served to you in a different format or layout and a few different like characteristics added to them, you get it's the same ingredients just given to you differently. And I like when clients give their opinion about their adjustments, and we end up coming up with some pretty cool ideas that I wouldn't have cooked up on my own. They wouldn't have cooked up on their own. Yeah, I mean, if you see anything on the portfolio that you're like, okay, I think I've seen something like that before, but I've never seen it like this, those are usually the ones that I walk away from my chin up and my chest out a little bit, you know?
So tell me, how do you feel about the crossover of technology and tattooing? Because, like, most of the shops now, I see everybody's using, like, iPads for designing.
Yeah, it's a game changer. You know, it facilitates everything. It streamlines everything. Whereas before, you would meet a person and then consult, talk about a design, set a date for them to come back and check out what you drew. If it doesn't fit the shape of their arm, if it doesn't fit the aesthetic they want, go back to the drawing board. And again, paper and tracing paper and different layers of cleaning the design up. And then finally kind of they come in and maybe you paste it on the skin and see what it looks like. Or sometimes they just as much as you would tire of the process and just say, this is what you're getting, this is where we're going to put it. They go to, they check out the placement, but they don't want to fatigue you or themselves. So there was a lot of what I call fuck it moments in tattooing, where they're just like, it's not where I want it, fuck it. They'll just do it. I've been waiting too long, or we've been here for 2 hours already, or it's not this, it's where I want it, it's not the size that I want it. And then an enhanced stenciling takes forever, so they would just be like, fuck it, let's just do it this size, let's go, you know. And it takes a lot of the fuck it moments, you know, when you use a tablet or an iPad or any other tablet. I've seen people use Wacom tablets, you know, and it facilitates the consultation. Sometimes we just have what do you call that, virtual consultations. We just chat, whether it be video, audio, or both, or emailing, and then they send you designs. They don't literally have to come in. You chop up the designs. I often take pictures of, or have them send me pictures of the body part they want, and I would crop up and do a mock-up of what the tattoo would look like, you know. And then we get to start shaving off things we do like or don't like better off, and then adding things we do like, and it gets the whole intermediate like process of dabbing back and forth with the image out of the way before you even come in for the date of your tattoo. You know, and the tablets is just streamlined all of that. Especially now when they come with pencils. When the tablets first came out, they were just, you know, with your finger. And I would have a hard time just drawing with my finger. Now with the pencils, and they're like pressure sensitive as well. But the tablets just streamlined everything. Just today, I was seeing a realtor guy who I know has been working like in his like since for like I'm lying 50 years because who the fuck has been at it for that long? But the guy's been in real estate for like 30 years. I know everything he's been up to and been doing has been like with a notebook in his back pocket and memorizing formulas of interest rates in his head, you know, and loan amounts. And the guy came over and he just pulled out a tablet, and then I'm like, oh man, I was looking at this apartment on the corner of blah blah blah. Whips out his tablet, finds the apartment, finds photos and 360 views of the rooms, and he's like, if you put this much down, this is what your interest rate's going to be like. You'll be finished paying it off in XYZ years, and the amenities and all that. Whereas before that, you have to meet up with the guy, look at the place, go meet up at his office, discuss numbers. The guy did all that in 5 minutes with his tablet. You know, and the guy's like in his late 50s, and even he's adapted.
So I've noticed that you use a lot of vegan products. What makes you gravitate towards using vegan products?
Straight up, fucking the looks you get when you don't. I mean, if there's even a crowd around you that is even present or not, I guess your own subconscious is eating you up at some point. You know, if it's not somebody hovering over you, you know, screaming vegan down your ear and animal cruelty down your ear, you know, sometimes it's just yourself telling you that, you know, this is the right path. We shouldn't be using products tested on animals or products that have animal, you know, like I think the old inks used to sweat out bones to extract the glucose from bones. And that would then allow your skin to recognize something in the ink and not fight it off immediately. Like, oh, this isn't foreign. This has glucose. All right, I'm not going to fight this off. I'm going to let this settle.
Collagen.
You know, so that was the old formula. And some companies still pump up stuff like that. But like a lot of the companies are hip to the game now. And they're all, you know, as before, we didn't have an option. Like even with aftercare, people used to use A&D ointment because there wasn't an ointment available or made specifically for tattoos. Now there's a whole variety. Some of them, I use some that have turmeric in it that helps with the swelling. The less swelling, the less pain, you know, and typically you're revisiting the same area sometimes when you're laying an outline, and then you lay the background, and then you lay the shades. You're revisiting the same areas quite often, and at that point, when you're back at it 2-3 times and the skin is all swollen up, the pain shoots. A lot of these products with like soothing agents like turmeric, they'll help reduce the swelling, less bleeding. The less bleeding leads to less ink spillage and dilution in the skin. A lot of products nowadays have CBD oils, which I use as well, and they also help boost your vitality and deal with the pain. So it's only been a natural process leading down to using vegan products. They not only do they ease my mind better and the client's mind better, they also just work better. They're more organic than your body just accepts the nutrients and absorbs them on much easier and much quicker than anything synthetic, even like the synthetic vitamins found in vitamin A and D. Anything synthetic, mostly your body can't process it, so it's useless even if it has 4 vitamins. You know.
So, can you walk us through what the day of a tattoo is like?
My pace right now, it's pretty hectic. I feel like if I've had an assistant, it would be much easier. But at my pace right now, there's the prep before the consultation. You wake up, you consult with a client. If you're not already consulting with 10 people at a time, go back and forth with emails, and then you get to your work site, wherever you're working, what studio you're working at, and you prep the design, you prep the equipment. Everything's sterile and fresh out of fresh packages. And then when the client gets there, you have a few moments of like layout and chatting about the design, what they want from it, what do you think you can produce out of it. Then you get to work and really it's that time lapse session where you just like start chopping away at the woods and start shaping and carving them, and then you just start crafting the hell out of a tattoo or out of design. And when it's all said and done, you know, you take that shot, you take that 2-3 steps back away, and you look at the design as a whole, and you're almost self-impressed because you didn't see it on a larger scale. You were just in like when you're in bingo or on a graph, you're like in, or what's that game, Battleship, you're in box A, row one, and then you move into still box A, but now you're in row two, and you just start chipping away at the design in that format so that when you're done and you're at box Z, row 10, and you're done with everything, you take a step back and you see all that was accomplished, you know. And it's a very whoa moment for myself, and I'm assuming for the clients, because now they're wearing something that was liquid threaded onto them, you know. They walk away with some instructions on how to take care of their tattoo, and then it doesn't end there, you know. They walk out, it's not over. You follow up just like you would with any medical procedure or doctor's visit. You have a follow up of how the skin's doing, how's it reacting, and you get to see this cocooning phase that the tattoo goes through, where it's like fresh, and then it's hardened and shedding. And then, you know, maybe hopefully within 2 weeks, if the person's of a good like health, their tattoo should heal pretty quickly, and then you get to see the end result. And then it just starts from square one again. Maybe they'll just, okay, now I want to do this, and then it just starts all over again.
I just freaked out and thought myself as like cocooning.
I always compare it to.
And I was like, oh.
Rango, where Johnny Depp plays like a lizard or voices the lizard. At the beginning of the movie, he looks up at the sun.
Yeah.
And then his skin and body just cocoons and flakes off. And it happens like 3 times over, where he just dries up and breaks out of his shell. And dries up and breaks out of his shell, because that's how dry how much the skin replenishes itself as it's healing. You know, people often, when this first time is usually, when they send me pictures, they're like, is this normal? And I'm like, yeah, buddy, it's the cocooning phase.
Have you ever found yourself challenged by a specific design? Was there like one specifically that you were like, ah, damn?
I've been dabbling in minimalistic work, and there's some pros and cons to that, where it will look amazing day one when you do single needle, very fine line, very small, minute detail. And it looks beautiful day one, but there's a phrase or a saying amongst tattoo artists that says bold will hold. So when it's large and it's bold, it'll be legible from here till, you know, whenever the person passes out. But like very fine line, you know, the canvas that you're working on isn't as permanent as like a painting or a wall or even paper, you know. Like skin ages at a much faster rate than, you know, a canvas or paper or a wall that you, you know, paint on or anything like that. Skin ages, and skin loosens, skin shifts, and sometimes the single little fine line detail stuff, it's beautiful, you know, first week or two, or maybe the first few months, but after a year or so, you're gonna have to either revisit or sometimes even like redo and 2-3 times as bold as you first did, you know. And that's what I feel like is complex or difficult, because I often find myself tiring the client when I try to explain them something that they won't see for a year or two. And sometimes it goes back to that like, you know, stiff-headed tattoo artist that won't take no for an answer. Like, no, this is what you have to get. And this is how it's going to happen. Where you can't really, like, change a client's mind. So you have to give them what they want. They have to see later down the line that you were right. But you won't gain that trust or that confidence unless sometimes you just have to give them what they want, and then later they'll see through their fault that you are right, and then sometimes it leads to a better relationship with the client, you know, because then even if I force a bold saturated design onto them, they'll walk around with the beautiful piece, but they'll hate it forever because they didn't win that argument, you know, they didn't win that debate when they wanted thinner and not bolder and more saturated.
Can you tell us a little bit of what it's like to work in a shop surrounded by a bunch of talented people?
Some artists, I hope most people can relate to where you're in a place that most people there do what you do already and don't take it the next step further and don't push the envelope. And then I've been in places where people do what you do already and are pushing the envelope. Are changing the norm and trying new things out. And then even if their skill level isn't where you would consider high, just their work ethic and their experimentation, you know, inspires you, and you're glad to be around people like that. Because I've been in places where some guys are what you would consider very very skilled, but they only crank out this style and they'll only crank out this type of work, and it's like, okay, I saw you do that yesterday and that was amazing, and I've seen you doing it today and it's pretty good, bro, but I don't think I want to come back and see it again tomorrow, you know. But and then now where I'm at now, I'm around some people that they're the whole spectrum. They're like from what you would consider very high skilled and moderate skilled. But they're just pushing the envelope on what they are currently doing, what they can do with what they work with. You know, they're very open minded to what can be modified, what traditionally isn't modified about a design, and just, you know, turning it into what you would consider a custom tattoo, just like you would consider you walk into a coffee shop and get coffee, sugar, milk, but if you walk into a more intricate coffee shop, that'll, you know, they'll switch up the sugar. It's sugar, but it's a different form of sugar. It's agave or it's honey. And then the coffee it's coffee, but it's from a different part of the world. It's pooped out by a different animal, you know. It's or the milk, it's not even dairy. It's some type of, you know, crushed nuts or boiled oats. You know, they're pushing the envelope on what can be done with simple three ingredient format, you know, sugar, milk, coffee. But you know, they're switching up each one of those levels is being toyed around with and experimented with, and that's where I feel I've enjoyed more working in an environment like that than the guys who just crank out the same stuff every day. Even though they've mastered that stuff every day, you know, they're not pushing the envelope or experimenting anymore.
Have you ever watched those, like, Ink Magazine, like, tattoo artist segments where they judge or review others?
I'm not fond of the critiquing in public. I feel like maybe as a peer, from one artist to another, you can critique and say, well, this is this, and I wouldn't have done that. But that's amongst a peer. But when you let the whole world in on, like, I don't like this, and I don't like that, it's critiquing, no doubt, but at the end of the day, it's your opinion. And I'm not fond of that, like, well, this looks whack, or that looks whack, this looks great. And to others, it might be the complete opposite. The things you don't like, others might find beautiful. And the things you do like, no doubt. And I really dislike...
Yeah. When it's almost like, who are you to judge, right?
They make the clients attack each other's tattoos. And then they're like, well, yours is wanky. Mine's came out great. Well, mine's isn't as bad as that guy. Mine isn't as bad as that guy over there. And that guy's, you know, sitting in the corner like...
Well, these have so been we've reached questions. The last serious question of the interview. Yeah. And
Yeah, these are the serious questions. So if there's a pet peeve for a tattoo artist, what would a tattoo artist's pet peeve be? I feel like I just asked you how much wood a woodchuck is a woodchuck would.
Amongst our peers, there's always like inside jokes, right? So I'm sure whatever you guys do, there's inside jokes about like the people that walk in the door or the clients you deal with. There's amongst artists, there's like inside jokes about people that walk in and ask for this and or ask for that. One a really good source of pet peeves for tattoo artists is an Instagram page called Monday Malarkey. And they'll always like have these memes of like, oh, so Karen walks in and she wants her infinity symbol looped over 4 times to build a dream catcher. Or, you know, like she'll want the silhouette birds, but like she wants each bird a different color or things like that. I don't think at this stage I have any pet peeves, I feel like, anymore. Because giving in to like being more open-minded as of lately, the tattoos will look the way they look, but they'll have a different meaning. Each person will walk in and say, you know, I want a circle, but for one person it's like, oh, the circle means earth and I've traveled the globe, or one person will be like, it means this, and or I love a sport that has a ball in it, or you know, here's a full circle that defines the huge hole in my life, or whatever the case is. You know, through that interaction, you lose whatever opinion you have about it or had, and then you get to kind of understand the person and the design a little more. So I feel like I've lost that like irritated sense of or irritated approach to like, oh, this, you want that, okay, I guess. You know, you kind of like, you also want to extract as much information as you can from the person, because you want to know what they're trying to say with the tattoo. And sometimes they'll think a circle is what best defines that moment or that idea, but maybe sometimes it'll be a circle inside of a square, and it better translates what message they're trying to come across. You know, maybe even like the circle inside the square, like, oh, I'm a square. You know, I have this 9 to 5, but at the nighttime, I'm a whole different like shape or character. You know, and it's always a little more than you think. You know, so it's I think I've lost that angle, at least for now. Maybe later it'll come back to me, and I'll just get sick of. Yeah, maybe later it'll like most things, they'll come back and
you'll be like, damn,
again. But for right now, I don't think I have that yet or anymore.
Hypothetically speaking, if you had not become a tattoo artist, what line of work do you think you'd be in?
A waiter at several diners around Queens, and I was always serving tables since I was like 13, because who the hell checks IDs at diners, you know? 13-year-old, 14-year-old taking orders for like scrambled eggs and cheeseburgers and lettuce. And then obviously working, I didn't do so well in school. My guidance counselor pushed me towards whatever subject I did better at, which was math. And I think, now that I'm saying it aloud, I think serving tables aided my math skills, because everything was on a handwritten checkbook. So you have to calculate the tax in your head and calculate the total and just punch out a check as soon as the table says, oh, we want our check. You just crank out all those numbers real quick. I went into accounting. I took accounting. And like 2 semesters before I could get a bachelor's, I got a job managing and doing the bookkeeping for a few tax preparation offices. So I was doing that for a while, but tattooing just picked up from there. And I still do and prepare taxes for my friends or relatives, because for them sometimes it's just a foreign language, all these forms and schedules. I still do and prepare taxes every year, but I feel like that's, and if I were tattooing, I'd be doing something along the lines of like bookkeeping or anything in the accounting field.
Do you have a favorite tattoo artist? Perhaps someone you admire?
But I feel like with most things from the era we're coming out of and now going into, a lot of what we thought was, or what, at least what I thought was like top notch, was mainly because it was spoon fed. You know, like in rap, you had 5 to 10 artists available, and those guys were like spoon fed to you, like these are the best rappers ever. Or in rock or grunge, you would have like these are the best rock stars ever. Here's the top 10 bands you have to listen to, and if you don't know these top 10 bands, you don't know this style of music, you know. But now the variety and the amount of talent out there mm-hmm. is immeasurable, really. Like I don't think I have one artist that I love, or I mean at least I thought I did until I saw who he started following and mimicking. And then, you know, artists imitate other art, you know. It's nice to think that they just came out of it on their own, but every artist is influenced by other artists, I'm sure, you know. And you just have to find where they got their influence from, and no longer do you see person A as like the ultimate influence. You see their influence as now your new influence. And if you want to do some more homework, find out whoever influenced that person, and you just start broadening the spectrum of who you think and what you think is good or cool at that point. So no, I don't think I have a favorite artist right now. I just think I like following a lot of people for what they provide to the table, but nothing that I uphold, like this guy or that girl.
So we know you don't have any tattoos. With that said, if you get a tattoo, what would it be?
I feel like I've always been drawn to that candle with both sides burning a wick. Like where it comes from, that, you know, burning a candle on both ends, where you're just overworking and never sleeping, and you're just kind of burning out, you know? I feel like that's where I've been as of like the past few years. I've just been trying to give my all to everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm a father, and I'm somewhat of a decent husband, and I'm a tattoo artist. So, and again, with just the tattooing, there's the process before the tattoo. There's the tattoo itself, and then there's the follow-up and all the upkeeping after. You know, that's a full-time job on its own. And then I try to come home and do the most I can here as a father and husband. And I've been on like 3 to 5 hours of sleep a day. And I used to think that was a victory, because you know, you'd pat yourself on the back like, wow, look how much I got accomplished. And I only slept 2 hours last night. But now I'm seeing it's a real loss, because lack of sleep is very harmful to your mental and physical health. You know, now before I used to, you know, applaud myself and be like, wow, look, I'm only sleeping 2 hours a day. Look how much work I'm getting done. But I'm also losing out on a lot, you know, and I often think like, wow, how many years or weeks of my life am I shaving off? You know, by living and continuing this routine. Yes. So I hope to get more sleep and condense everything to just the bare essentials of what I need to get done.
So in the vein of the last question, this brings us to the golden question. Who would you trust to tattoo you?
I don't know. I think someone who would be very well-versed with dark skin. Not because they're used to it, but because they boost up their contrast with their work a lot. So they have to make the image legible instead of with, you know, 6 tones of black and gray, sometimes just with 1 or 2 tones. Sometimes I've seen artists just pull off amazing shades and heavy black saturations with just black. You know, they'll pull off a gray, and they'll, you know, stipple, or what they call pointillism, and they'll break up the black into dots, and that would create a shade of gray. And then some areas that need a heavy saturation of black, fully pack in the black in some corners, and it's all done with one tone, and it makes it legible. You know, on lighter skin, you can play around and fidget with more tones, you know, 6, 7, 8 tones sometimes, typically 4 or 5, but you can broaden the amount of tones or shades better offset. But when you're working with darker skin, it would have to be the bare essentials, the bare minimum and identifying features of that design with just black and maybe 1 or 2 tones of grays. So I feel like anybody who's like on the west or southwest of the states, if it is someone within the states, someone who's used to seeing clients with like a lot of baked skin,
let's change it up a little bit. We know you're a big movie fan. What have you found yourself watching these days?
Sci-fi. I love storytelling. I'm always, every other few years, I'm always rewatching the Twilight Zone episodes. I love how they could introduce mystery. Cool. They can introduce horror or drama with just the simple storytelling. You know, there was no color. There wasn't like a large, like, boom, here in your face is like some monster coming out of a wall. You know, they can introduce all these emotions out of just, you know, storytelling. Simple, like, 20-minute episodes will just introduce just spark a little like wonder, like, because they never really finish an episode and conclude it, like, all right, this is how that story ended. They always like, well, this is how this story kind of like mellows out.
Yeah.
Who knows where they're headed down the road and or what'll happen when they turn the corner, and that's it. This is their little walk through the Twilight Zone. Movies, I feel like I don't have the patience as of lately to sit through a whole long thing. I feel like the 20 minute doses of Twilight Zone episodes is fine for me right now.
It's funny that you said Twilight Zone because my junior high school English teacher used to actually base some of our classes and our writing off of the Twilight Zone. So he would like play us the 20 minute episode, and then he would want us to be like, all right, well, you write your perspective on it. And some of the stuff that came out of it was so creative. And, you know, obviously, right, we never found out, like,
I love how they like leave you,
oh, is this exactly what that episode was about or not, you know?
Yeah, but if it were to stick to, like, if I were to say movies, anything like sci-fi, yeah, just kind of in that same realm of,
I love,
like,
that
mystery and wonder. You know, you've seen all the love movies and all the horror movies, and the good guy wins, or the couples always end up together, or yada yada yada. You know, but I like a little mystery where, you know, you kind of just compose and and produce the rest of it on your own, kind of up to debate. You know what happened. Like The Matrix. I was watching The Matrix the other day. All 3 movies.
Yeah.
And then still at the end, you're like, well, what kind of happened there? Is it like, is it transcendence? Is it evolution? Is it just a metamorphosis?
Yeah. Like, all right. Since it almost feels like we're living in a scene, yeah, of
they
end game.
Really leave us.
Tell
prior
us,
to
how
that
bad do you miss the Mets?
You know, there was, unfortunately, you know, they inject us with,
yeah,
I always tell people, right, who come in and they know I'm a Mets fan, and I always tell them it's not my choice. Like, I grew up in Corona. I live one station away from the stadium. You know, I couldn't go to the Bronx. God forbid. Who wants to go to the Bronx? You know, as a teenager, or, you know, even younger, let's go take a trip to the Bronx. You know, let's see what happens to us out there and go watch a Yankee game. You know, you grew up a Mets fan because, I mean, I feel like I didn't have a choice. They yoked me in when I was young. They gave my school $2 tickets, you know, for nosebleeds. And, you know, $2 tickets, go watch a Met game. You know?
Oh, I remember that.
We would go like 10 to 20 yeah. feet, you know, the whole neighborhood. You know?
That's it. We were sold.
And they got us. They got us when we were young. We didn't know. We didn't even know what happened. It just happened.
Tickets.
Yeah.
Yo, and what's funny is,
it was,
we didn't even know what baseball,
you know, colors,
was. None of us grew up watching
names,
baseball.
Well, I did.
You know, and the I always get taunted a lot because this whole like Crips versus Bloods thing with like, oh, Yankees or Mets. And like, I tell them, bro, I'm not racist, dog. I keep it whatever, you know, whatever's a good game to watch, I'll watch it. You know, yeah. I'll wear the Mets flags because it's more like a, more like a neighborhood, you know, I inherited that love and affection for the game, for the Mets, I mean, but it's tough being a Mets fan. It's hard out here. You know, you always have guys on the offense or the defense about how poorly we're doing, but you know, I joke around and I tell people we should get discounts on depression pills. These guys start off really well, really strong, and then they just start picking us off one at a time. You know, somebody gets injured, you know, and it's where we end up right where we started, where we ended up last year, just kind of nowhere.
We know you're into music as well. Who would you say your favorite musical artist is?
I was really heavy into some what do you call that? Like black metal, and then I came into some whatever category the Deftones are. Maybe they're even their own category. Who knows? You know, but. I love the Deftones, the Mars Volta, anything that assimilated something like that. I grew up with rap. I grew up with Hoodlum, you know, that stuff is just inherited. But the content, I feel like with that type of music, isn't really there anymore. I'm leaning nowadays more to like rap battles. They're so witty with delivery and their punchlines. If ever I'm listening to anything, it has to do with like verbal or you know, anything of that form. It's like I'm tuning into some rap battles where there's comedy in it because they're like clowning about you. There's that dark nitty gritty because they're insulting you. And then I've given up on trying new things, at least with music for now. Like I just go back to this my same old playlist. I don't think I have patience for new music as of lately. I don't have the patience for it, really. There's too much out there right now, and I don't feel like I can dive into that pool right now.
What's your guilty pleasure musician? Like, what's a song that you, or musician you wouldn't want other people know that you listen to?
I feel like I put off.
I feel like I could take a guess, but.
This very unbreakable, very opinion. Like, know what I'm saying, you know, character about me. But I very much like this guy called his project is called Songs Ohio, and he's very like heartbreak, in you know, wallowing in my sorrows, you know, fucking the sun rise on my farm type shit, but. You know, you can relate, or if you can't relate, you can't relate. You guys should listen to him. Like, you go to like his page on Spotify, Songs Ohio. It's like Ohio, but with an A at the end. And it's got a lot of good. I like the way it sounds. I like the way his voice sounds. I like the way his guitar comes out. It's really. If you like it, let me know. Let me know. I'm listening to something decent. You know. The poor guy. Once I was convinced that I made the decision to like not hide that I like the music, and said one day today I'm gonna just look up tickets, and the next time he's in town, I'm going. And then after 6 years of listening to him, I decided to go online and look for tickets. Homeboy had passed away the prior year from like an overdose. And I was heartbroken. Like, that shit ruined my day.
Damn.
But,
yo.
fitting to his style of music, I guess.
That's an ending we were not expecting.
But yeah, like, if you ever, like, listen to him, he's something I like. And not try to push out there onto people. You know, when people come around, you're like, let's listen to this. I know someone's gonna like it. Yeah. It's not something I put on around people. Oh, you know who else? There's this disco cover. a metal band that covers disco music called it's after a Bee Gees song.
Yes.
I forgot what their name is.
Huh.
Shit. Yeah, I forgot what their name is.
I'm trying to remember because you told me about them.
I discovered them in Philadelphia. They played metal music. No, they played metal music, but
Disco Inferno.
It's all to riffs and lyrics of disco songs, and you know, or even if you don't know, you disco music. Unfortunately, you know lyrics, you know all that. You just don't know you know it. And then here it is in like this awesome like metal form and riffs from like Slayer and riffs from like Kiss, but with lyrics of like Bee Gees music. Oh, it's called Tragedy. The band is called Yeah, it's amazing.
Tragedy. I was just listening to. Yeah, it's all metal tribute to the Bee Gees and beyond.
Yeah.
So you're a foodie.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough
for
anyone.
Where can you find the best tacos?
Adding to that, the layer that I'm Mexican, you know, it's a whole, different aspect. Like I'll never go to Taco Bell. You throw cheddar cheese and diced tomatoes on anything, it makes it Mexican, according to Taco Bell. No doubt. Enjoy it. No doubt. I pity you guys.
Yo, but I love Taco Bell.
Taco Bell is life. Taco Bell is love.
Not my flavor. I don't know. There's a few spots that I go to and I frequent. Like they're so hole in the wall. I don't even know their names. I just know where they are. I know what times of day, which cook is on the grill that like puts a little extra, you know, elbow grease into the flipping and the flapping.
Damn. You
know, usually it's somewhere anywhere like around Corona or Jackson Heights, somewhere on Roosevelt or on 37th Avenue. You know, there's always a variety of selection. And it's not just tacos, there's like our versions of sandwiches called tortas. You know,
sometimes
it's all like breaded meat and the typical like toppings, which are like avocados and beans and all that, just in a sandwich. That's another episode for another time. Just, you know,
yeah,
visiting. Oh, you guys should turn this into like a video,
a foodie tour show with you.
Just audio and just start visiting places you guys love. I know. I was listening to you guys the other day talk about your favorite pizza, right? And then I feel spots you guys mentioned well, definitely knows for me. You know, and in my head, like these guys don't know. I got my own list. Yeah, you guys should definitely like dive into like an episode of just, you know, tasting and flavoring different places. Spots of Queens. Queens has the largest, if not documented, largest selection and variety of cuisine in what I hear, the world.
We are like entirely diverse. Like we are diversity. It's I don't know if you remember, but they were saying that like you can do a tour of the world just off of the 7 line.
Yeah. You get off at 74th Street. They said 74th Street, you get a little taste of everything.
No doubt. You get off at one stop, it's all this.
No, like every station is a different part of the world. Mm-hmm.
You know, West India. You get up at the last stop, it's like a little culture fusion of like Asia. You know, it's what I've heard people say, it's the melting pot of the melting pot.
That was pretty much our fun questions. Yeah. You made it through the hard ones. Good thing you didn't have to phone a friend. Yeah, right?
No, thanks for inviting me. I've only caught up to a few episodes.
But yeah, thank you for like being a part of it.
I'm fond. I don't get the chance to hear much things. Again, my window for entertainment and podcasting is very short, and I was enjoying what I was hearing so far.
you for tuning in. For those first-time visitors, we're three local artists from Queens who put this podcast together straight from our homes until we're able to re-enter the outside world in one communal room. We'll be interviewing a local artist every week. Next week's artist will be Tina Marie, a poet from Queens.